sunny hills where the money houses grow. I saw him there as I passed down the road. He looked up, cracked a smile, said, "How are you?" I said, "I'm good." He said, "I'm good too." The Mexican gardener in the land of the free. Mexican gardener in the land of opportunity. In the canyons, boulevards and avenues, Mexican gardeners got their work to do. Park the truck outside, take an armful of tools. Poolside, but never in the pool. That's the Mexican gardener in the land of the free. Mexican gardener in the land of opportunity. Mexican gardener in the land of opportunity. Well, he's not well up on Marx's theory, but he sure has got his own philosophy. It's called getting bread on the table every day. So we crossed the border, moved away. That's the Mexican gardener in the land of the free. Mexican gardener in the land of opportunity.
Raven in the Blues on Talk Radio Europe, Kansas City Online Radio, Radio Napa in Cyprus, and of course the podcast across the world. There you've been listening to Mark Harrison, a Mexican gardener. Mark with friends, Josie and Will. Welcome to the Raven in the Blues. Good to have you here. Look at your website. It's often you read into websites and you know, more than actually the words actually say. And it's, I think, if I get yours, paraphrase it roughly, it's didn't play the guitar for many, many years, and then suddenly picked it up again.
That's right. Yeah, I didn't do anything for about 15 years, and then I decided to buy a national guitar, and I went out and by coincidence I found this one, which used to belong to Eric Bibb, and I liked it, and so I got playing again, and I started going out a bit and playing, and I went down to one or two places, met the London blues scene, and I got kicked off from there. I met Will down there.
Why was there a hiatus? Why was that 15-year gap? Did you fall out of love with the music?
Well, I think I decided there wasn't anything around that I was interested in, because I stopped at around about the time when all music appeared to be done by people on what looked like a typewriter with a funny haircut. And I came to the conclusion that, rightly or wrongly, there wasn't anything around that interested me. So, yeah, I suppose I just wandered away.
But you didn't play at home or anything? You just sort of gave it all up, put it away in a cupboard?
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Put it away, yeah.
And are you kind of pleased, in a sense, that you've now got it back? Or is it kind of a cross you have to bear?
No, it's fantastic to have it back. And in fact, it's better than it was when I was doing it in the long-distant past anyway. Mm. And I think that what exists now, what you can go out and do now and the kind of people you can do it with, that wasn't around when I stopped playing. Mm. And so it's different different scene now, and there's much better stuff going on.
But before the break, was it still blues then, or was it just...
Not really. No. I mean, blues-ish, but no, not really. I had a thing going that had a whole brass section in it and a steel drummer. And so there were lots of personnel issues around that. So you spent more of your time...
Dealing with the egos.
Well, yes, and just trying to organise things. Yeah. And very little time actually playing. Mm-hmm. So one of the things, when I got going again, I wanted to be able to do it for myself on my own rather than have to put a band together. But then I met all these people who are fantastic, and so we've got a band going.
So you decided, I mean, but did you start on your own, or did you always want to have somebody alongside you left and
yeah,
right?
I was going out on my own, actually, and playing as an instrumental guitar player. Mm-hmm. And I got this, I always liked John Fahey, the great instrumentalist. And I figured that there was nothing wrong with doing that. And then I started to put words to some of the tunes that I had, and then gradually I started to go out and sing them. And pretty quickly then we got the ball rolling on it, on the whole thing, yeah.
And so how did the three of you come together? Did Josie and Will both come at the same time?
Or? No. I started by going to the Green Note in Camden, where there was a monthly... blues jam, but it had an acoustic section, and I used to be the acoustic section, actually. and Will came once or twice to that, and so we met that way. So I've known Will, what, 3 or so years since we started doing that. And then I also met double bass player Charles, who plays with me regularly. Mm-hmm. And we had a mandolin player who we met down there. And so we made the first album pretty much on the hoof with that kind of
that was
lineup.
What, about 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
2010, yeah. And so I hadn't really done any gigs in my own name when we did that. That was really just for the fun of doing the songs and all the rest of that. And then I thought, well, this sounds pretty good, and I'll try and do something with it. And the first gig I got was a support act for the Holmes Brothers at the Luminaire. I loved them. and it was great, you know, and we turned up, and everything about that night was fantastic. And they were some characters. And so, you know, we just went straight into that world and started to play quite regularly in various of the London venues. And then just over a year ago, I met Josien and Ben. They're a wholly viable folk act in their own right. And they started to come and join in with me, and she sang on the current album. Ben plays bid on that one, yeah. and will be fully on the next one. So the five of us are a fairly regular fixture, and sometimes we also have a drummer, and then you can fill in your own drummer joke in there.
We'll leave that to one side. Let the audience do that. I've got too many drummers listening. What are you going to do for us next?
Okay, well, Josiane's going to sing the next one, and this is a obviously, all the material we do are my own songs, and this one is a sort of protest song called Not All Right.
Strange situation, that ugly sight. Bullies and cowards always unite. Demons or angels, but it's not all right. It's not all right. It's not all right. No, it's not all right. Bad combination, hatred and spite, dragging the dead souls into the night. Easy decision, darkness or light. And it's not all right. It's not all right. It's not all right. No, it's not all right. Evil intentions look down from a height. Mad dogs off the leash. Whoa, they always bite. Those chosen people don't fight a fair fight. And it's not all right. It's It's not all right. It's not all right. No, it's not all right. So say what you want to, don't keep out of sight. Get in the way, and don't be polite. Think you can win, oh, well, you just might. And it's not alright, it's not alright, it's not alright.
Josiane on vocals, and it's not all right. That really is, I would call, sort of acoustic blues down Piedmont Appalachian way, but it's definitely a blues number, but with so many folk overtones, isn't it? Does writing come easily to you?
I feel like I've hit on my thing, and I'm keeping it pretty simple. If you unraveled the songs, you might sneer at the construction somewhere, if you wanted a lot of chords and a lot of business in there. But what I started off listening to was the pre-war acoustic blues people, and that's where I've got all my playing and all my ideas from, really. And when I got the guitar, I started to buy up all of the things that I couldn't have bought when you had to buy vinyl records and couldn't have afforded them. And of course now you can buy someone's complete works for a tenner. And I started to listen to all the things that I'd liked years ago, but in detail. What I realised was that there's quite a lot of different forms in what gets called blues. And if you just look at the pre-war acoustic stuff, which is where I think the real action lies, there's all kinds of songs in there. Most of those guys were doing songs, and the women too, Memphis Minnie and that. And they didn't think that they were doing fairly formulaic stuff. They thought that they were doing tunes that would appeal to the public, and I think they were right about that.
Mm.
So I felt that there was an awful lot in the form, if you just explore that form.
So in a sense, you kind of personally, internally, didn't make that journey from the cotton fields up to Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
No, and so when I kicked off and I started to try and play a few of the tunes that these people did, it made no sense. Plus, I didn't know how to play them. And if you listen to something... If you listen to Mississippi John Hurt and think this is some of the simplest music you're ever going to hear, I defy anyone to play it.
Yes.
The bloke had his own completely made up for himself style. It sounds simple. You can do what he does for about 20 seconds before one part of your body seizes up, mostly right hand.
Right.
And so I was trying to do all that to begin with, and I couldn't do it. And B, it made no sense to do it because these were people in a different world. So my idea was there's no reason why you can't take that basic form and write songs about anything. And so I've got songs about anything, really. And some of them are about those people and their world because I've read a lot about it. And lots of them are about, they're about things like Mexican gardeners in California.
Mm. And your own experiences come in there as well.
Less so.
Right. You mean you divorce your songwriting, you kind of say, I know I'm feeling kind of wired by the events of today, but in fact that's going to not influence my writing at all.
Not really, no. because I'm not extremely interested in myself, and so the impetus to write something isn't how do I feel.
It's funny you should say that, because a lot of bands come through here, 30 or 40 a year, roughly. And occasionally you see lots of egos coming in, you know. But the three of you are very, very calm. Obviously know each other very well.
Yeah.
But basically it's just a very calm environment, isn't it?
Anyway. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think we we know what we're doing within the context of what we're doing, and we're comfortable in our own roles in it. And one of the key things for me about the band part of it is that everybody who's in it is really fantastically brilliant musician, and they've got room to do their thing in what I do. So I'm there, but they can all shine around me. And the key thing for me is that everybody should shine.
So you're the ringmaster rather than the dictator.
I think that I'm largely irrelevant.
You're getting two big smiles from left and right here. Josien, what is he? Dictator or ringmaster?
I think ringmaster seems like a bit of a strong term. I think
right.
He's not that much of a heavy leader.
Right. But he obviously allows you the space to be you.
Yeah. For me, I love Mark's songs. And it's great fun to be part of it. And there's kind of space for me to really develop my own kind of ideas on it, my own stamp on it.
As a folk singer, what kind of folk do you sing? Can we generalise like that and say roughly can we sort of pigeonhole you in your folk singing category?
Very much the sort of June Tabor and Sandy Denny school.
Okay, I've now got that in my mind. Because, of course, if we take it right back to the roots of the blues, if we bring the influence up from Mali and the Cameroon and Africa, that same time on its own wouldn't work. But, in fact, the other influence is from the immigrants from the UK and the folk scene, therefore. So, yes.
Yeah, there's as much British, Scottish folk music in the mix, isn't there?
Yeah, totally,
the
yes.
Things, yeah. Mm. Well, in fact, I've been talking to myself about how Josien and Ben might at some point explore the avenues of some of that, where the early blues crosses over with folk music.
Yes.
And I'm pointing them currently at Washington Phillips.
Now, that's a name I'm afraid I don't even know.
He was this itinerant preacher in the 20s. He cut about 16, 18 sides, as they say. And his distinguishing thing was he had a homemade auto harp. But it sounds a lot better than auto harp might sound.
Mm-hmm.
And he, you might know him for Denomination Blues that Ry Cooder covered.
Oh, yes.
That's Washington Phillips' song. And he had a very distinctive style. I had a mother and father, what was it? I had a very good mother, forget the title of it, which Paul Richelle and Annie Raines also have done.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly in that, these are, if you like, folk songs. Mm. I mean, you can spend ages debating this, but if you had to put them in one category. So this is where folk and blues meet.
There's been a lot of discussion recently here in UK, and there was in Toulouse at the weekend at the European Blues Union about whether blues, the generic title, was the right one. I know you use roots on your website.
Yeah.
And I know Claire Free and quite a few others are saying what we are hearing now in the UK, some of the bands coming through are not blues in the real sense of the word, and perhaps we should have another word. The consensus, I think, is the way it's going at present as we speak in mid-March. The consensus is the best thing is leave it as the blues, otherwise it'll confuse people.
Yes, because it can mean whatever those people want it to mean.
Mm.
I mean, I played last week up in Wales at a really great place, a Werthenbury Blues Club. I don't know if you know those guys. They run a blues festival. And afterwards, I did my thing and I talked about the songs. And some of what I talk about is the blues people that the song is about and the world of it and all that. And a lot of people came up to me afterwards, and this is a blues club where they've seen a lot of really good acts.
Yeah.
And one youngish bloke came up and said, "So have I been wrong about this all the time then?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know." And he said, "Because I thought that blues was Eric Clapton and the Allman Brothers and Stevie Ray Vaughan and all of that, but is what you've been doing blues then?" So that was a fellow, and there's nothing wrong with this. You can understand that view.
Totally, yes.
And so he
roughly the age, what, 30s?
Under 30, I'd say.
Yeah, yeah,
just
okay.
under 30. It's a guess.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he will have scurried off now to find all these people I was talking about, because he hadn't known of the existence of something called blues before Cream. You know, we don't need to sort of comment on that. But I think in the end, you can have lots of conversations about what is blues, but you can be having them with someone who doesn't know anything about the existence of what I always thought was assumed to be blues. So when I came out and started playing, I thought people might have a go at me for not covering Robert Johnson songs, which I am not capable of playing, by the way. But in fact, of course, I found as I moved around that the debate was whether blues had to have long electric guitar solos in it. And I hadn't known that that was even an issue on the table. So, leave it as it is, I think.
Yeah, so there's no crossroads in North London for you to sell your soul at then.
Well, no, but there's also...
The North Circular and the M1, probably.
But if you listen to the whole of Robert Johnson's stuff, you'll find hardly any 12 bars in there. And quite a lot of things he thought were sort of the pop songs of the day, because he also wanted to make it and be popular. And so his repertoire didn't consist entirely of what people think of as blues.
And he stole quite a bit as well. So.
Of course, yeah.
Because they all did.
Yeah, he became Turner 20 years after the previous generation. So he nicked a lot of stuff from Sun House and all that. And then there was Blind Willie McTell, almost exclusively a ragtime player. So there's a whole lot of ragtime and fun and silly songs in that repertoire that people don't know about. We used to laugh in the back row, but we're not laughing now. Well, the longer it goes on, sooner it comes round. Well, she was a good friend of mine, she's at the end of the track. Well, I know that she's gone now, she won't be coming back. Ashes to ashes, gone up in smoke. Stand on the corner, make a gallows joke. The money comes in and the money goes out. Dancing on the deck while the ship goes down. I don't know what your name is, don't know where you came from. But if you've been in a dark place, I'm sure we'll get along. All over the town there's people heading for Skid Row. So don't forget a kindness, cause you won't get many of those. Ashes to ashes, gone up in smoke. Stand on the corner, make a gallows joke. The money comes in and the money goes out. Dancing on the deck while the ship goes down. you talk about hard times. What hard times have you had? Everyone needs a bit of luck. Lately mine's been bad. There's gonna be no harvest. There's no wheat and there's no corn. But the sun started shining. Maybe I can be reborn. Ashes to ashes, gone up in smoke. Stand on the corner, make a gallows joke. The money comes in and the money goes out. Dancing on the deck while the ship goes down. Ashes to ashes, gone up in smoke. Stand on the corner, make a gallows joke. The money comes in and the money goes out. You're dancing on the deck while the ship goes down.
That's called Ashes to Ashes, is that right?
That's cool. Yeah.
I jotted down the title on my way out of a crematorium, but I had no use for it for a while, and then I had the song and I just pinned the title on it, so the title doesn't appear in the song.
No, it doesn't have to.
No
law which says that now. But in terms of the number there, I mean, Will plays quite a big part of it, so
yeah.
Did it sort of... Is that how you sort of envisaged it in your mind when you wrote it, in a way? Or did Will add his extra bits to it, if you see what I mean?
Oh, I'd say Will added his extra bits to it, yeah. But no, it's an interesting point, because we do these in all kinds of different lineups.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the full lot of people are there and sometimes they're not. And we've not really ever had a formal rehearsal. So... It's one way of putting it, I suppose. And although we did try one once, it has to be said it was a bit of a shambles.
What, the rehearsal?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we might try it again one day.
The songs just sort of evolve.
Yeah.
Don't they?
I mean, it really is. It just does evolve. And so we play them a lot and we go out and play at places and then try things out. And one thing I must say is that because I haven't gone out recruiting people at all. I haven't gone out and looked for people, and I've met people, and so it's a natural thing that we've all got together. There's not been a kind of I'm a band leader putting a band together. And so if you're going to get people who are as good as these people are, and I defy anyone to come up with a better harmonica solo than what Will just played, or a better piece of singing than what Josien did, because these are the very best you're going to come across. There's no point me telling them what to do then.
No.
Really no point.
But obviously, because it's going to vary, as the band may vary some nights, and I would guess also, as it's obviously such an organic thing anyway, if anybody sees you working late summer somewhere, that's going to sound very different again, isn't it, probably?
I don't know. I mean, the things become more formalised the more times that you do them, and when people have decided that thing that they play works, then they're likely to do something very similar to it from then on.
It's not entirely true, though, because when things kind of get to a point where we all know what we're doing, you start doing weird stuff in them. You think, they've got it now I'll change it.
That's the band leader part of it again.
Absolutely.
Yes, I'm changing the set list but not telling you.
What's kind of interesting to me is I very occasionally do a solo gig, and I did one the other week, as I say, and if I leave out all the bits of business that the others do, all the songs appear to last about 25 seconds. Done your whole set in 15 minutes.
We were talking before we started the session, and you mentioned Doug McLeod, and I have a feeling, I haven't seen you working live, but I have a feeling that you and Doug have a kind of a similar kind of stage presence, because I've got a feeling you talk quite a bit as well between the numbers, do you?
Yeah,
you've
certainly.
You've already said so, yeah.
For sure. I mean, if anybody's listening, because most of what I'm doing... Most, not all, but there is something that the songs are about something. And because they're not about me and how I might feel or at any given moment, there is something that they're about. And so there is certainly something that you can say about each one that is a kind of coherent point, I suppose.
We were talking again just in between, you were tuning up there, about sort of the Blues Police and things. Well, we weren't, but you sort of alluded to them. And the Blues Police used to be terribly strong here in the UK, and often many blues clubs you couldn't play at unless, do you tell Bargain Boogie? No, we don't, sorry, can't use you. But it does seem this last 18 months, 2 years, thereabouts. Very recently, though, there has been a shift, I think. Is that true from your point of view?
I'm not sure. I haven't encountered it and fully expected to. And people, I mean, one of the first bits of advice I got when I made the first album was, whatever you do, don't call it blues. In fact, those are the guys that did the fantastic artwork. And I went to see them, and they took out a bucket of CDs saying, it can't look like that. It can't have a train on it.
Right.
It can't have an old bloke on it. So that was me straight off the cover.
Yeah.
It can't have an old guitar on it.
Yeah.
You know.
That's right.
And so they felt that the blues was full of cliches and generally looked down on. But I have not found that. I really have not found that in the few years that I've been doing it. Maybe it's because I haven't been doing it that long. There's shows such as yourself that play a real range of stuff. Lots of what you play, actually, I've got. And you know, genuinely like, and it's a, you know, I'm sure you'd say it's a huge variety of music under a very broad umbrella, and I think that's what I found. Whether it's changed here, I don't know, because I'm not aware of anyone sniffing at me for not doing 12 bars all the time.
In terms of planning for the year ahead, the last album came out, is it only about 9 months ago there, isn't it?
The Crooked Smile one is less. It was the end of November, so it's a couple of months.
So you're still, as they say, touring the album.
Oh, yes. I'm fascinated by this, because since I haven't been doing it for very long, there are things I thought I'd understood that had a certain meaning once that they don't have now. And tour is certainly a word that I'm confused by now, because if someone gets a gig that's just outside the M25, apparently they call it a tour.
Well, it's because if you suddenly find you get one gig up in Maryport or Newcastle or something, you think, what else can I get? So you taunt yourself around looking at the Google Maps, finding anywhere in between, you know, to try and make some logic out of it. Or then, when you're going out and not coming home at night, that's a tour.
Okay, well, I've just done one then.
How long was your tour?
2 nights.
Okay, good. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah,
it means less printing on the back of the T-shirt. But you're, again, if we look at what I call the white noise of Facebook, but your profile seems to grow in there. There's more and more interest, and that presumably is leading to more and more venues around the country.
Yes, I mean, Will put me on Facebook and set that up for me, and I agree with you about white noise, and you can be distracted by a lot of what you read and see there. And I've got the vague notion that a lot of things look bigger. Can look bigger than in reality they are.
Yes,
depending
on how
much of that you do. Yeah. I tend to just put up what I'm doing in a reasonably factual manner. Yes, I mean the album's gone down very well, and lots of people have said and written lots of nice things about it. And we'll see. I mean, we're in a sort of transitional phase now. We'll see where we can go. What I think I would say that, but I think what we're doing is quite different. Even from anything that is under the broad umbrella of blues, the songs cover a very different territory from what most people are doing. The musicianship can't be disputed, and so hopefully, you know, people when they hear it will pick up on it and think, well, it's something, you know, a little bit different.
Anybody signed you a festival? Any festivals this year?
Well, in fact, we're going to do a couple of folk festivals.
Ooh, right. So, well, which makes sense, yes.
Well, there's a whole other conversation in that to which I don't know anything. I think, you know, JCN's in the folk world, and there's hotbeds of dispute there about what constitutes folk music.
Well, yeah, it's interesting you're saying about the term blues. Like, we're having exactly the same thing with the term folk. Like, it can be one tiny little section of things, and it can encompass both ends of the spectrum.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's exactly the same kind of consideration. But you've done a few like folk club gigs as well, haven't we?
Yeah.
So I think there's definitely a crossover.
Oh, without a doubt, yes. You could see how in either a pure folk venue or a pure blues venue, what you do is going to work equally well in both.
Yeah, we'd hope so, yeah.
Because the joyous thing is, I was saying to you one before we started, I've just come back from Toulouse, and there was such a wide range of music all under the umbrella blues, and more importantly, 400 or 500 people in the auditorium enjoying it all.
Yeah.
And that was joyous to see.
Yeah, and I think something of that is about the songs, and that this kind of music really did start as people doing songs. And of course, some of them had quite extraordinary guitar skills that were very individual to them. And there was a kind of internal between them, this is what we do. And I think, you know, Blind Lemon Jefferson, well, it was a fantastic guitar player. And then there's a lot of people would see that and go, I've got to cop a bit of that.
Yeah.
But primarily to eke out a living as they did, they had to be entertaining people. And a lot of what they were doing was songs that would catch with people. Yeah. And that, I think, I was surprised when I found that there are people that think that it's all about a kind of jam lead guitar solo thing. I mean, I don't dislike lead guitar solos as long as they've got something to say and don't go on forever. But the idea that that was the definition of the music,
yes,
was a bit of a surprise to me. And so there are people out there that haven't heard Statesboro Blues by Blind Willie McTell who think the Allman Brothers wrote it.
Yes.
And then presumably they think they wrote it and then decided not to do the song, but just leave the solo in. Yeah. I don't know. It's all very odd.
Yes. A website you've got active, is that all your work too? It's sort of the Mark Harrison empire, is it?
Or it's certainly not my work, the website.
Okay, you have a man that does, do you?
Yes, and we'll set it up.
Okay.
And it's
It wasn't me that made it look nice, though.
Oh, right.
I just kind of did like the bare bones of it.
Yeah.
And some person who knows actually what they're doing made it look very nice.
Yeah, and it's www.markharrisonrootsmusic.com, because there are other Mark Harrisons who've nabbed slightly shorter domain names. So I keep that up to date with all the latest gigs, and on the news part of it, I put up any new reviews or anything that's of interest that's going on.
And you can get the album from there, and also from all the usual outlets, so
yeah, definitely that, yeah.
You've got quite a few videos on the YouTube channel as well.
Well, the website links to the YouTube channel. Mm. So
you can follow you on Twitter as well.
Yes, I'm on Twitter.
Right. Again, is that Will who did set that up for you, was it?
Yes. Yes.
That happens automatically.
Right.
Whenever he enters something somewhere, I'm not entirely sure.
So I type in something that's somewhere too long to be a tweet, and then you get a bit of it on Twitter. I think that's
you get a hint of what the beginning of what you're talking about, and then you have to try and fill in the rest you've been at the end.
You could spend your whole life doing these things, you know.
I know.
Rather than actually doing any playing.
Yes. I mean, we were talking about the Facebook white noise in Toulouse, and I said the thing is, because I was with Ashwin Smythe, another fellow DJ, and I said the thing is, if we took everybody who was active in the blues Facebook community in the UK and put them all in a room, it'd only be about 40 of us, you know, in terms of the Facebook thing. And yet, if you look at it and don't, it seems like we're running, you know, they're organising the whole thing, and we're huge, and we're not huge. There's about 40 of us, musicians, DJs, promoters, the whole bit, you know, making lots of noise.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, the good thing about that is it's likely to be 40 quite nice people that you're happy to spend your time with, because what you do is you locate a piece of life that's really very congenial for you.
I have a feeling deep down, because I'm of an age, that if we got all 15, 20 UK DJs, blues DJs, in one room together and locked the door, there'd be murder within an hour. A collective noun for a group of DJs, because Will is like sort of the Trivial Pursuit of the band, in the sense that when you're on the road, he just comes out with important. I've discovered this already. You've only been on the boat about 3/4 of an hour, but one more bit to add to your Trivial Pursuit collection, in a sense, is a collective noun for a group of DJs is an ego.
An ego of DJs.
An ego of DJs, yes.
I can't believe that, Dave.
I know. Surely not. I know, looking at me now, you wouldn't believe that, would you? But it's
not a jingle.
It could be a jingle. I mean,
a phone-in of DJs.
A cacophony of DJs, yes.
A spin. A phone-in of DJs.
I think a spin is showing your age.
A spin?
Yeah. That's because we don't spin nothing these days. Mm-hmm. It's all.
But surely if you're in something like the blues world in that capacity, it has to be that it's because you really like it and you really like the music. And
yes.
There's nothing else in it, really, is there?
We're going a bit sort of off, what's what the Americans call it? Going a bit baseball now, sort of. We're starting to sort of talk internally things, but it's true. Most DJs would never say another DJ's name, even if they worked on the same radio station. You know, you don't say who's following you, or you don't say thank you to Will for the previous 3 hours, it was great. You never say that, ever. And you never, ever mention a rival radio station. DJs have been sacked for that. And yet, amongst the community, and so you have hit a nub of it, we are cross-training each other. We're talking about each other. Most of us are. We accept that they exist, and they may occasionally play records that I passed over and missed and thought, bloody hell, did I miss that, you know? It is better, yeah.
Yeah.
We have gone way off baseball now. Let's come back to you. What are you going to finish with?
Well, as I said, a number of the songs that I do are about the blues world and people from the era of pre-war acoustic blues when it started. And I among the things I did was accumulate something of a book collection and actually read those books. So I in fact have a book that's exclusively dedicated to the juke joints of the Mississippi Delta, and I've read the whole thing and I'm an expert on that. And the best book that I got is the one that was spoken by David Honeyboy Edwards. Did you ever have him here on his visit?
Sadly, no.
See him?
No.
Honeyboy Edwards was the oldest surviving original yes. Mississippi Delta blues man. He was a big friend of Robert Johnson's and all of that, certainly according to his book. And in the mid-90s, something like that, no, maybe the mid-2000s,
yes.
he spoke his book and some people wrote down. So it's a transcription. It's really an oral history.
Right.
Perhaps slightly tidied up. And it's called The World Don't Owe Me Nothing. It's a fantastic and fascinating book about the people, but really about the era. And like a lot of these histories, you read someone talking in a matter-of-fact tone about something you would regard as utterly shocking.
Yes.
And so that's obviously a world that we can't know anything about. And actually continued to be like that until, you know, into my lifetime, actually.
So growing up in the Northeast and loving the blues, I veered more towards Chicago blues, Jimmy Reed, that kind of stuff, because the songs, the things they sang about, I kind of understood, you know, high-heeled sneakers and all that, and those kind of things. Where I, to me, Parchment Farm sounded quite attractive in a way. And, you know, farm, I don't have farms, and what's this farm thing? And putting, you know, in a 10-foot... Why do you have a 7-foot sack, for instance? What's wrong with a 7-foot sack, you know? And it was only many years afterwards that I know you're laughing now, yes. But in those days, the rural blues didn't have any impact with me at all as a Geordie in the Northeast, because it just couldn't. And nowhere did I read that Parchment Farm wasn't a farm. Well, it was a farm, but it wasn't a nice place to be. And so, therefore, the town blues, the Chicago blues, is much more my kind of growing up thing. But you're right, in a sense, that, you know, that it's only now, afterwards, can you learn about these things.
Yes, although, you know, we could debate that you may have come from the sort of the warm and friendly Northeast, whereas I come from Coventry, and rural blues certainly resonated...
Did it?
Well, perhaps to a degree, yes, yeah. Because the Midlands is a much more dour atmosphere in which to grow up. I don't mean there's anything wrong with that. I quite like the Birmingham sense of humour, because I know there actually is one. But a lot of people regard that as kind of miserable.
Yes.
But if you live it, it isn't miserable. It's just a different take on life, if you like. And I always like that. But the rural blues, the people that have studied it and get behind it are sort of disappointed that it doesn't contain a lot of protest about the lot in life of black people down in the Mississippi Delta, which, if you think about it, how could it have?
Yes.
They
would have been found on a tree, yes.
So course. And so you get all this kind of matter-of-factness in that book, and it puts quite a lot of context onto a lot of the music. So although they weren't, it said that they were singing about their lives, they were singing about the small portion of their lives that we have in common with them.
Yes.
So going out on a Friday night or business with women. So it was only that section of it. They were not putting into a sociological context their life on a plantation or whatever. So it's the feel of it.
And I guess also their audience didn't want to be reminded of it either. There's no way of you going out to listen to some good music on a Friday night.
No.
And you want to be reminded of the previous week you've just had, in a way.
Absolutely, because the whole thing was a sort of displacement activity with the occasional reference to something that they would have all had in common. That would be to do with work, but not to do with what was going on in terms of injustice and that kind of thing.
I think it's also kind of interesting to think about how these things are recorded and like what agendas the people with the recording equipment had and what they wanted to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of them, sort of these guys that were recorded, were wandering kind of jukeboxes. You could play all the popular hits of the day, all kinds of music, and would do at weddings, parties, and so on. And yet, what sort of Lomax and Co. wanted to record was them playing this.
Yeah.
So now we think that's what they played all the time.
That's true. Yeah, because we've got no set list anyway, have we? Yeah. We don't know what they did. Yeah.
There's the Blind Willie McTell 1950s recording where Alan Lomax went and took a hotel room in Atlanta. And he asks him, you know, so have you got songs about injustice against black people? And Blind Willie McTell is basically going, no. But you can hear him thinking, but I'll put one together if that's what you want.
Give me a few minutes.
And then proceeds to do a ragtime version of a gospel song.
Right.
Because he wants to change the subject.
Yeah.
But it struck him as an odd question. But for Lomax, it was the thing he'd gone to find, as you say.
Mm. I've been doing live sessions on the boat now for 6-7 years. It's been the longest introduction to a final number we've ever had.
We were trying to be brief.
When Todd Sharpeville was here a couple of weeks ago, and we ended up with a really long session, which I was going to cut down. I thought, no, if people want to hear it, they'll hear it. And this will be an equally long one, but it's been a joy to hear the three of you. And so what we are, we've almost got there. What are we going to finish?
Okay, we're going to finish with Honey Boy, which is a song about his life. Maybe 14 when I headed on out. Well, I picked up some tunes, I picked up my guitar when I moved around. Kept on moving from the Levis to the Country Friars, going round with those good old friends of mine. I got stories to tell of the trains and the tracks, of a man going out, man not coming back, of a long lonesome road, of a big laughing face, of a no justice world in a tumble down place. Well, I met me some woman and I moved right in. Was okay for a while, was okay for a while. Then she cussed me and cut me and give me hard time. So I moved down the line, oh, I moved down the line. Kept on going from the cities to the little towns, playing on corners where people came around. I got stories to tell of the trains and the tracks, of a man going out, man not coming back, of a long lonesome road, of a big laughing face, of a no justice world in a tumble down place. Everybody was having hard times. I got stories to tell of the trains and the tracks, of a man going out, man not coming back, of a long lonesome road,
of a big laughing face, of a no justice world in a tumble down place. Of the trains and the tracks, of a man going out, man not coming back, of a long lonesome road, of a big laughing face, of a no justice world in a tumble down place.